What's good, everyone? Matt here from UK Nets Fans, and I'm joined, as ever, by Aidan McConaughey for another episode of BK to UK, the British Brooklyn Nets podcast. Today is Tuesday, the 25th of July, and today we're going to be chatting about the new Nets, a trip to Paris, hopefully, on the cards, and obviously dipping into the mailbag to answer your questions. Before we get on with it, make sure you're following us on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at UK Nets Fans, and check us out on YouTube, where you can watch us live and sort of run it back and see all our old episodes too. But with that out the way, let's get into it. We're going to Paris, baby, hopefully. The Nets have been selected for the NBA Paris game. Obviously, used to be the NBA London games, and we're still a bit bitter about that, but we roll. January the 11th at the Accor Arena. It will be the third NBA Paris game, and the Nets will face the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I understand, Aidan, that you are in a bid to get tickets.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, certainly going to try to get there. I don't think I can justify going over to Paris without actually getting a ticket, but I'm sure it would still be amazing to go over there just for the different events and things that are going on. Yeah, I mean, really exciting news, obviously, for European Nets fans. We've seen Joe Tsai in recent years. He really hasn't shied away from these type of opportunities. Obviously, the NBA have offered us to play in Mexico and China in recent years, and I think they bit their hand off on both those occasions. He's certainly someone that's trying to promote the Nets and the NBA in general, and the WNBA on a global stage, which is great, and it's obviously great for us. I'm sure there'll be tons of people trying to get tickets. There's obviously kind of a ton of different pre-sales that you can go and sign up to now. I think you can sign up directly via the Nets, you can sign up via the NBA, and you can sign up as well via the arena itself, the Accor Arena in Paris. So it's probably worth signing up to all of those if you are trying to get tickets. I've spoke to a lot of American fans as well that are coming over to Paris, which is cool. So it'd be nice to see some faces that we only really know from Twitter and seeing on our screens at home when they're in the crowd. Hopefully we can get as many Nets fans there as possible. I'm hoping there's not too many corporate tickets. I know these events sometimes tend to go to a lot of the businesses, the sponsors and things, but it would be nice to see an arena just jam-packed full of European NBA fans, Nets and Cavs fans, and fingers crossed we can get a win on a global stage. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, it's always exciting when I think the NBA comes to Europe, but to have it be your team is extra special. I remember sort of, I think it was 2014, the Nets came over to London and played the Hawks. And that was back when I was sort of just getting into the Nets, and I went with my brother, and it was amazing. And it was just, everyone is just bang up for it. Everyone's got their drip on. Everyone's got stunting out in their jerseys. And, you know, you see fans from all different clubs and all different franchises just getting together and just celebrating basketball. Like you say, like being on Twitter is great, and being in the Discord's really cool because we chat to people that are Nets fans every day. But to actually be able to link up, have a beer, actually watch basketball, there's nothing like it. So big up everyone. I hope everyone who wants tickets gets tickets. In terms of Nets fans, big up Ramon Castro in the comments saying, hope both of you have a fun time in Paris game and do vlogs too. If I get there, I will be hideously busy on creating content, and I hope anyone else that will get there will be there too. So that's NBA Paris, fingers crossed on that one. But back to the Nets proper, it is still off season. So what goes hard on off season is podcast appearances. Mikal Bridges has been everywhere. We've got a couple of news items that we wanted to get you to today. The first one on basically an interview with Brian Lewis. Mikal Bridges was asked if he thought the Nets we have right now, in the end of July, are going to be the Nets that show up to training camp in October. And he said, yeah, pretty much, I think so. And I'm really pretty excited about it. I mean, I love the guys that we've got. Just bring everybody back and finally go through preseason. A new coaching staff for Jack, just to have his preseason, have his coaching staff, whoever he wants, and put what he wants coming in for him. So just excited for him to have a preseason, have his guys he wants around, pretty much have it his way. And I'm excited for us all to be together and have these schemes from the jump, instead of being thrown out there with three different teams in one lineup and just trying to figure it out. So I'm definitely excited. Obviously, the three teams noticed, sort of mentioned by Bridges there was obviously post KD trade. We get the Twins in from Phoenix, Bridges and Cam Johnson. We get Dorian Finney-Smith and Spencer Dinwiddie back from Dallas in the Kyrie trade. And we were just kind of all meshing it together. So what I love about this and what I think has endeared Mikal Bridges to the Nets fans so quickly is that he seems to be the kind of leader, the kind of vocal leader that everyone sort of wanted KD to be, and he just wasn't. So whereas KD kind of left, sort of led by example, obviously superhuman on the court, can do everything, takes all the big moments in his stride and all that kind of stuff. Mikal Bridges is on the court, off the court, in the community, just, you know, always got his guys back. But, you know, running it back is, you know, not so popular a lot of the time. Me personally, I'm a big fan of it. I think this is the most Nets that we've retained from one season to another in years. But just hearing those words from Bridges in regards to his teammates, his coach, the outlook for next season, how excited he is to be back in Brooklyn. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've nailed it there in terms of what we've heard from Mikal Bridges in the last couple of weeks. I put in the Discord the other day, I can't believe how blessed we are to have came away from obviously such a big trade in the KD trade with someone so talented. And it's not even just his talent, as you say, his leadership, his ability to play 83 games in one season. You know, you take these little things and you add them up, and I'm starting to run out of players who I would trade Mikal Bridges for, like, straight up now, which is a strange thing to say, because probably when we first got him, we wouldn't have dreamed of saying that. But in a situation right now where we've obviously seen what he can do on the court, we've seen what he brings to the team, how he brings the team together, he's invaluable right now. He just gets me excited about watching the Nets next season. And it has been a while since I've been that excited in terms of the prospect of the team. Obviously, when we had KD and Kyrie, we were obviously at a stage where we knew what we were. We knew what we were. We knew what we could do. We knew what our goals were. But right now, I generally don't know where the Nets are going to be next season, which is a nice thought, because I know they're going to be good. It's just how good can they be? And with someone like Mikal Bridges, I think we can be really, really good. I think he's really getting behind the team. I think we'll get onto that shortly. But yeah, I think he's just, his excitement is shared amongst a lot of Nets fans at the moment. As you say, there's probably a bit of minority of fans that would love to see us maybe change things up a bit more. But in terms of where we are right now, I think it's exciting, and we can go into next season hopeful that we can build on what we have. And as you say, it's a good unit that we have right now.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Tsai, you either love him or you hate him, I think, in Nets world. But he was, you know, last season he was all talking about, I want people that want to play here and play hard and play together and stuff. And it feels like that's exactly the kind of group we're getting together. Obviously, we're going to dip into it a little bit more in detail a bit later, but to be the leader of that group, I think he just has said a lot. You know, I think he said in that in the podcast P episode, he was like, look, I don't want to be getting 30 a night. I want everyone to eat, and I want everyone to contribute and be involved in winning. So just, you know, he's saying all the right things, and, you know, it will be better if you see it happening. But in terms of, you know, what you want your players to say, this is absolutely music to Nets fans' ears. So him saying, obviously, we're going to run it back and he thinks this is going to be it. Do you think I think we've got one more roster spot and one more two-way spot. The Nets tend to stick there, barring any Tyler Herro, Dame Lillard fallout, James Harden shenanigans, like, do you think there's anyone that Nets, do you think the Nets will make a move?
Yeah, I mean, you do have to take what he said with a slight pinch of salt. It's kind of a loaded question from Brian Lewis. He's not exactly going to come out and say, oh yeah, I think we're going to trade so-and-so and so-and-so. It's just not going to happen. But I think he is probably just about right when he says, yeah, pretty much. I do think Sean Marks has always got a trade in him. He's shown that since he came in the door. He's always got a trade in him. But I do think where the team is right now, there isn't going to be any significant trade where you're going to go, wow, this is a completely different trade. A completely different team that we had compared to the end of last season. I think, obviously, it's quite significant that the Nets haven't used their mid-level exception yet, and obviously any of the TPEs as well. We've obviously still got all of those. I think we've got four or five now. Who knows if we're actually going to use them. But the fact they haven't used anything like that or the mid-level is, it could be significant in the fact that maybe they're holding off for a certain guy that's holding out for a team to sign him, like someone like Christian Wood, who's obviously not been picked up yet. And then there is room to bring someone like that in. I don't think he's probably not going to be that guy. I don't think he fits this team. But someone like that, that they may have an opportunity to get in the door. I think the boring answer and probably the most obvious answer as to where the Nets are right now is the fact they're so cautious of these new cap rules, and they've eventually managed to get themselves under the cap by like something like 9 or 10 million. So I think they're pretty comfortable in that position right now. But yeah, as you say, there seems to be just a pin being put in the NBA trade world until anything happens with Dame Lillard or James Harden. And once that goes down, then you never know. There could be a massive, massive outroll of trades. But until then, I don't think there's really anything the Nets can do to change where we are next year.
I think you're right. Like, there are still holes in the team, which everyone whinges about, the backup big and another guard to help Spencer. But there's no one out there that's obvious. So, you can come up with trade machine sort of offer sheets till the cows come home, but you don't know. So I think sticking with what you know, and I think is if this team as advertised sort of sticks around with what it is, I wouldn't be mad, and it'd be interesting to see. But sticking with Mikal Bridges, we were going to touch on this anyway, but shout out to Riley in the Discord and to Ramon Castro, the Digimon Emperor on Twitter, which is the best bio I've heard for a good long while. They were messaging us, wanting us to know what we thought of Bridges going on Paul George's podcast P episode and discussing Ben Simmons. Now, I'm going to read this out. It's quite long, but I think it deserves to be read out because I love this from Mikal Bridges. He said, "Ben Simmons is my guy, man. I got confidence. I got big faith in him this year. His back was messed up. Now that he's got surgery and he's getting back, he loves the game, bro. I think he's in a good place. Fucks with all of us like we're close. He's the one talking in the chat all the time, and we all fuck with him. Obviously, we want to score. We want to score and all that, but we ain't pressed about it. Like, we just want him to be him." And then when George asked how what support system Bridges and his teammates are using to help Simmons, Bridges says it's up there for Simmons to help him deal with the it's being there for Simmons to help him deal with the pressure of a highly anticipated return. And he says, "Just be there with him, man. Support him. Even if he struggled, that's cool. Like, shit, whatever city we're in, we're going to hang out, go get dinner, whatever you want. Get ready for the next one. I think that's the biggest thing. Just so he can be confident enough to fail. Know, like, we are there for him. You don't want anybody to feel that pressure every single time. Oh, if I don't play well, oh shit, these guys might not like me. For me, that's not the case. Listen, bro, you struggle. We want to be there for you through the process. If you shoot 5 middies in a row and you miss all 5, fuck it, shoot the 6th one." And I think that is just incredible. Like, just building off what we said about Mikal Bridges, about this team going forward, about Ben specifically, I couldn't have asked ChatGPT to come up with a better response for what I want the team to say about Ben Simmons. It's just like, we know he's good, and we just, you know, we're just going to be there for him, and he's cool, and he's back, and he's mint, and he's, you know, he's not this kind of alienated guy that kind of is so mysterious and whatever. He's cool. He's with us. He's down. He's ready, and we're just going to let him be him. I know we've basically just been blowing smoke for Mikal Bridges for the past 10 minutes, but what did you think of him in regards to this Ben Simmons piece?
Yeah, I mean, I listened to the podcast in full today, and it was just brilliant. I loved his relaxed nature about getting asked the question. I felt even last year when guys like KD and Kyrie got asked about Ben Simmons, there was almost like an uptight defensive nature about it, and that's not really the way that Mikal went about it at all. He was very relaxed and open, which I think you do tend to believe these guys a lot more when they're kind of going about that nature. He was having just a conversation with Paul George, who also showed support, obviously, for Ben. Says that he believes he's still got it, and he's rooting for him to come back, like obviously we are. I liked as well that he touched on the fact that Ben loves basketball, and obviously it's something that's been questioned massively. It still gets questioned on social media daily that he doesn't have the heart for the game, but he obviously said Ben's never got a ball out of his hands, like, as opposed to everyone, he's always got the ball, he's always trying to work in his game. And I think that's something that Nets fans, a lot of Nets fans know. I do believe that we know there was something there. Obviously he also mentioned about that there was almost a confirmation that Ben Simmons obviously had to get that surgery, obviously, that he said. And I think that was kind of playing on Ben Simmons, obviously, because so many people were saying, like, he just doesn't have the heart. But the fact that a doctor told him he had to get the surgery, that was kind of like the turning point for him, that he knew, right, this is something that's like an actual medical issue. I need to go get this dealt with so I can get better. So hopefully that does give him confidence. But yeah, no, in terms of what Bridges said, it was just so nice to see him supportive, because I mean, he is the leader in this team. I mean, Ben Simmons is probably another big kind of player in this team, obviously, is receiving one of the biggest contracts. But to see another guy like that be so supportive is so important, and it's maybe something that we were lacking last season, that support for Ben Simmons. And I think it's going to be massive for his game. But yeah, shout out to Bridges, obviously paying compliments to Cam Thomas. And he also paid compliments to Nick Claxton as well. I think they done a thing at the end where they done like a starting five of underrated young guys around the league. And he said Clax was his five, which was nice to see. So yeah, he's really just complimenting everyone. And it really does put a feel-good factor around this team. But yeah, he just spoke so well on the podcast, and you could see Paul George was just in awe of some of the things he said. You could tell he just really, really liked him. So yeah, no, it was a brilliant lesson.
Nice. And this just goes back to that kind of hybrid rebuild that I sort of hinted at last week, where it was obviously we're in a new era. It's not a traditional rebuild where you send out everyone and just get, you know, rookies or whatever. But you know, we've still got, you know, Mikal Bridges is obviously incredibly talented. Nick Claxton is ascendant. Cam Johnson, we've got, you know, we do have good young players that we spoke about this last year. But having Ben Simmons, who could come through, and if he's 80% of what he was, you know, this team has got more athletic, more defensively minded. And that just, you know, deals, you know, sort of goes into Ben Simmons's plays right into his wheelhouse. So yeah, it's could be so huge. I think we're going to talk about what our predictions are for our over unders and stuff, and what our win loss record is going to be. But a healthy Ben Simmons could add tack 20 wins onto your season, and I don't think that's an exaggeration. Yeah, I'm just so gassed, man. I need some Nets basketball back in my life. Big up to Saint from Next Kingdom in the chat on YouTube. If you're watching us live, get over on YouTube and you can interact with us in real time. It does mean a lot to us. But right, we've teased it enough. Let's talk about the newest Nets. We're going to start with Dennis Smith Jr. obviously these signings were done a little while ago, but we're only just back, so we're going to take the time to have a little look back. And you know, sometimes I need things explaining like I'm five when it comes to players that don't already play for the Nets, because I'm a bit of a homer. So Dennis Smith Jr. Signed a 1-year vets minimum, 25-year-old point guard, 6'2". In his career, he's averaged 10 points, 4.4 assists, 3 rebounds and a steal. From the field, he shot sort of 44% from the field, just a touch under 30% from three, which obviously isn't great, and 66% from the free throw line, not ideal. He spent last year in Charlotte, where he played 54 games and started 15 of them, and on 24 minutes a game, finished with averages of 8.8 points, 4.8 assists, and 3.1 rebounds. Basically, I think he was like the 9th overall pick, or something crazy, unless I'm getting that mixed up with the other one. But he's struggled with injury, bounced around the league, went from Dallas to New York to the Pistons to the Blazers before the Blazers actually cut him and he was out the league. He was considering, you know, working out for the NFL before the Hornets picked the phone up. But from what I can tell, the two things you need to know about him are defense and distribution. That is what he does. He doesn't really offer much on putting the ball in the hoop. But yeah, he's just all about defense. What have you been your impressions on Dennis Smith Jr.?
Yeah, I'd say probably out of the three vet minimum guys that we've signed so far, this is probably the move I'm most excited with. As you say, he kind of came into the league as a bit of a hot prospect, but he just fell off, really. I don't know if he was just maybe not in the right teams at the right time. He went to, obviously, and he got that move to the Knicks, and everyone thought that was going to be his move, that he was going to take his game to the next level, but it just never really went there. And obviously, when he went to Charlotte, he kind of took his game back to the drawing board, because he was this guy that almost took too many shots that really wasn't his game. He's an athletic guy. He offers such a good option offensively for the Nets, in terms of obviously being a backup point guard. Just because we did miss that last year with having a guy who can handle the ball, but also offers an option where they can be athletic, get to the rim and score. But yeah, I mean, the way he changed his game last year defensively was incredible. Probably one of the biggest change-ups we've ever seen in a guy defensively. And he actually tweeted earlier today, I noticed this earlier, he shared a tweet, it's about DPM, which is basically apparently the all-in-one defensive metric, in terms of who's the best defenders in the league. And it's got the top 12 and Dennis Smith Jr. second, which is crazy. And first is Alex Caruso, obviously a great defender. Third, OG Anunoby. Fourth, Draymond Green. Five, Jaren Jackson Jr., Steven Adams, Herb Jones. You know, these are the best defenders in the league. And this guy is second in this defensive stat. And I mean, me and Matt will be open, like, in terms of these kind of intricate stats, we don't really know how these work, but if it sounds good, then we're happy. And that certainly sounds good to me. Adding to a team that's just got really good defenders already, and if we're pulling a guy in that can offer almost like a defensive player of the year or all team, all your defense kind of level, then that's good enough for me. I think he's going to be an exciting prospect. And it's nice to get a vet minimum guy of a guy that's kind of going up. In his career, instead of kind of on the way down, which seems to be a theme of kind of Nets vet minimums in recent years. So it's nice to get a guy that seems like he is eventually finding his role in the league.
Yeah, it reminds me of when we first signed Joe Harris and Spencer Dinwiddie. It's just these players that are kind of bounced around almost out the league, been in the G League, all this kind of stuff, and then we sign them and develop them, and all of a sudden, you know, I know Spencer's had borderline all-star seasons. Joe Harris has been literally the best shooter in the world at times. So it's kind of been a running theme for the three players that we're going to talk about, where it's been, you know, low risk, potentially high upside. And yeah, the key has been defense. It really strikes me that our entire identity is going to be all about defense and, you know, running in transition, not shooting so many threes, which is a bit of a worry with, you know, two of the three of these guys that we're going to talk about. But yeah, exciting times. And, you know, people on vet minimums want to earn NBA contracts. So there's going to be tons of hustle, which is very, very cool as well. Talking of hustle, the next one we're going to be talking about is Lonnie Walker the IV. 24-year-old, 6'4". He's a shooting guard that has played a little bit at the three as well. Obviously spent last year with the Lakers. Career averages 9.9 points per game, 2.3 rebounds, and 1.5 assists per game. These shooting numbers are a little bit better. 42.2% from the field, 34.9% from three, 80% from the line as well, which is very, very cool. Last season, 56 games for the Lakers, including 32 starts, and up 11.7 points per game, an assist per game, and 1.9 rebounds, I think that is as well. And that was on 44, 36, 85 splits, which is a bit more like it. I think he's kind of the guy that, out of the three of them, he's the one that can make his own shot. Obviously, incredibly good athlete, 6'10 wingspan, with a 40-inch vertical. Did miss 14 games with knee tendonitis partway through the season, and then I think he kind of got a little bit out of the rotation, thanks to Austin Rivers, and you know, they brought in Rui Hachimura, D'Angelo Russell, that kind of stuff. So he kind of just got lost in translation a little bit. However, when playoff time rolled around, he had a couple of big moments, scoring 12 points in game two and in game four. I think that was in the Golden State series, where he's in game four, he scored all 15 of his points in the fourth quarter to help the Lakers overcome a 7-point deficit and win that game. So on this Nets team, you love to see a little bit of playoff, a bit of playoff balls, which is good. But again, just absolute athlete. Bit more on the offensive end, and yeah, obviously he has this whole story of him and his hair and all that kind of thing. If you haven't heard that story, Google that. That just shows you the kind of guy he is, and you know, just what kind of character he is. It's crazy. But yeah, I like the look of Lonnie Walker, especially on a 1-year vets minimum, like you say, with Dennis Smith Jr. It feels like he could be on a bit of an uptick with the right situation. He just kind of got lost in the shuffle at the Lakers, behind Austin Reeves, not Austin Rivers. Thanks Ramon Castro in the chat for picking me up on that one. But Aiden, Lonnie Walker, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Lonnie is probably going to be a huge part of this Nets team this year. And as you say, kind of picking him up on a vet minimum is massively underrated, considering his role in that Lakers team last year. Again, he is just starting to go over that edge of being a seriously good role player in the league, which is great to pick up again, and not getting a guy who's kind of been down and out over the last few years. So yeah, he, as you say, took his game to kind of a new level when he was starting to play serious minutes for the Lakers in the playoffs. You mentioned that Golden State series where he essentially won the game on his own, getting those 15 points in a quarter. On a Lakers team that was just really, really tired, he came in and done the job. I love the fact that he's part of the Greg Popovich school of just being a pest of a defender. I think everyone that's came out of San Antonio in the last 5 years has just been an absolute nightmare in terms of trying to score against them. So I love that. And I think there has been a slight dip in that quality from him since he's moved away. But it's definitely something that he has in his locker, and I think this will be a good fit for him. I think in terms of the signings that we've made, just having a look at the guys, this is probably the biggest need that we've met so far. Obviously, last year we did struggle to get points off the bench after the trade. Obviously, Bridges and Johnson and Claxton were kind of carrying a lot of that scoring load. And to have someone like Lonnie Walker, who can maybe give someone like Mikal Bridges a bit of a rest and can come on and maybe score even just like 12, 15 points a game is really important. So yeah, I think I think it's definitely a really good pickup from Sean Marks. I'm surprised he's probably not gone for a mid-level exception somewhere else. But I listened to that Chris Carino interview, like you said, and he seemed set on coming to the Nets, and I think he was excited to play with Mikael Bridges. He mentioned him, which is nice to know that we do have a pool of certain guys to come in because they want to come and play with the guys that are here at the moment. So it says a lot about the current unit. So yeah, I think he's going to be a good player for the Nets, and I do think he's going to be someone that's probably going to play 20-25 minutes a night.
Yeah, just looking at sort of the first time he spoke to press after he got announced, he said, "I saw an opportunity, understanding this is a very young core group looking to build, looking to grow, and I fit perfectly with the fellas that's amongst the team as far as Cam Johnson and Mikael Bridges. On and off the court, we have very similar outlooks on life, and the court we play very well. So I think our chemistry and everything as far as growth and becoming something like a very special team is going to be something really nice. We all have similar intentions, and knowing what we want to be amongst this team, just to be great every single day, we're going to continue and try to be better and than we were yesterday and just stack the days." Yeah, it just seems like this is so reminiscent of like the Kenny Atkinson days where people just want to come here because of the vibes a bit, but the vibes now aren't dances, it's we're here to work hard and win basketball games. So yeah, absolutely love this. Sounds a bit like he's gonna almost promised minutes, and I think who we got someone in the mailbag, Joel Hinsley, big up Joel from Twitter. Cam Thomas chances of getting starting more games. I think Lonnie Walker is probably Cam Thomas's biggest threat of getting more games on this next team. So yeah, it's he can put him up when he needs to, and he sounds incredibly motivated. Obviously coming. Spending all that time in the Spurs, and obviously Sean Marks has all these links to the Spurs. So yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. I'm getting more and more excited as we go through these. But on to the next one, we have Darius Bazley, again on a one-year vet minimum, 23-year-old, 6'8", power forward, although weirdly spent like most of his seven games with the Suns playing at the center, so small ball five. Opportunity there. Career averages 9.1 points, 5 rebounds, and 1.2 assists, and his splits of 41% from the floor, 31% from three, 67% from the free throw line. As mentioned, played 43 games last year, 36 for Oklahoma City, and then 7 for the Suns after being included in the trade that sent Dario Saric to the Suns. Averaged 14 minutes a game. Pure athlete. Showing flashes of something special, but basically this is a lot like the other two. For one reason or another, he's kind of fallen out of the rotation and bounced around the league, but complete athletic defender that could be a good three-point shooter as well. So he's got good numbers from three. I think he was somewhere around 37%, but it was on like super duper low volumes, so that's going to be a tricky one. Big up Saint in the chat, who said that the Nets have moved off from Joe, Patty and Seth and replaced them with younger, more athletic players. Lost some shooting, but defense and attack in the basket has improved. So hopefully, I completely agree with that, and hopefully with this maybe Bazley just needs that green light to kind of let it fly a little bit more. But yeah, again, love this. I think I spoke to Snowy from OKC Fans UK, who had tons of really, really cool stuff to say about Bays. Criminally underrated defender, like ridiculous wingspan, but that three-point shot was just inconsistent. And he said he does give the ball over a little bit, which is a bit annoying. But yeah, Bays, how do you feel about Darius Bazley?
Yeah, I mean, I said last week he's definitely the guy I've probably watched the least out of the three vet minimums that we've picked up. I don't think that's on me. I just think he's not exactly someone that jumps off the page of kind of box scores and watching games. Obviously, I think me and you are the same. We tend to watch teams play against the Nets, and that's usually where we see guys the most. instead of watching kind of their own games. So I don't think he's jumped off the page massively when we've seen him against the Nets. But, I mean, there seems to be a theme in this team with guys who have got a 7-foot wingspan. I mean, bringing Beasley in makes this team even longer. And, I mean, there's going to be a lot of arms on this Nets team next year. So that's certainly interesting. Obviously gives a good option defensively. From what I've read, he is an impact defender. He can come on and kind of be a pest. And obviously at his height, it's going to be a big factor. I don't think he's going to have a massive role in the Nets to start with. I certainly think there's going to be opportunities for him to play just because of our lack of height at that end of the court. But as you mentioned, he has obviously shown hints that he can stretch the floor, which obviously opens up opportunities for us to have, say, 5 shooters in the court at one time, or it even opens up more possibilities to play Ben Simmons at point guard so that we have 4 guys around him that can shoot. So yeah, that's interesting. Obviously, it's something that you mentioned last week, Matt, that the way Jack Vaughan has brought in his coaching staff to be development-based, really. Obviously, bringing in guys from Long Island and guys from elsewhere who want to make young guys better. And I think someone like Darius Beasley will benefit from having these coaches around him. He's still only 23 years old. He's barely started his career. And in a team now where there's less pressure, obviously he was on the Suns where there was a ton of pressure to go and win. Whereas now there's pressure to go and win, perform, but there's certainly not that level of pressure. He can go out there, he can play through his errors. And at the end of the day, they're just going to look at that as an opportunity for him to get better and show where he can improve, which I like. So yeah, I've got confidence in guys like him, Cam Thomas, Daron Sharp, all this year to get better. And at the end of the day, that all that's going to do is make the team more competitive. So I don't see why that should be an issue this year. And it's something that we can get excited about. So yeah, another good pickup. As I say, it's one of those ones with the Nets where you just don't know how much they're going to play because we bring in big guys and sometimes they don't even step foot in the court just because of the way that we play. But I don't know. I think a lot's going to change this year. So I think we could be surprised with the rotation as to who's going to start, who's going to get minutes. So there might be an opportunity for him to come in and play. And if he's good enough, then that's good enough for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, but the proof is in the pudding. I guess it just makes sense of all these kind of more player development coaching hires, as you said. But yeah, it's turns out sometimes they do stuff which does make sense, which is a nice refreshing outlook sometimes. But talking to big men who probably won't see the floor, as we were just loading up to come out on this episode, the Nets have signed Patrick Yusuf Gardner, a 6'11 stretch 5 who played for the Miami Heat Summer League team. It's a training camp contract, but he's kind of what the Nets want. He's just an absolute unit who, you know, is 6'11", can put the ball on the floor, can shoot the three a bit. He's 24 years old and he's a Long Island guy. So probably be one of those where he just sort of comes in for training camp as a body. They just say thanks very much. Here's your Long Island Nets uniform. But you know, could turn into something. We've got, you know, it's a very, very shallow bit of the roster the Nets have got. So who knows? Maybe he could go from Poughkeepsie, which American place names are stupid, to Brooklyn. But we shall see. Obviously, literally just come out, but I don't know. Have you seen anything? He's going to play for Egypt in the World Cup. So that's kind of cool. So you might get a bit of time with Mikael and Cam. What have you made of this guy?
Yeah, I think he had a good summer league from what I've seen. Like, I've literally checked. I think he had a few 20-point games. Yeah, big body, as you can see. I've watched a few highlights, can put the ball on the floor, can score at the three. He's either going to get a 2-way contract or he's going to go to Long Island. So I don't think that's our final vet minimum that people are expecting. It's definitely going to be a 2-way contract at best. But yeah, as you say, it's probably exactly the model of player the Nets want. So you never know. It might be someone that can make that jump. But right now, it's a guessing game because I think I've watched about 2 minutes of highlights from him. So I'll just need to wait and see.
And everyone looks good in their 2 minute highlights. So
that's it, especially when they speed it up as well. When they speed it up just by like a couple of seconds, always looks amazing.
Love it. Right. So all that's left to go through now is the mailbag. So big up the Discord. Tyler, Brooklyn Nets LDN, says thoughts on the Nets over under being set at 37.5 games. What's over under? What is over or under achieving this season for the current roster? I think 37.5 games is a bit stingy. I reckon we're a 500 team. I could even go as brazen as to say I reckon we're going to win 45 games this season.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, I've seen a lot of varying opinions on this. Some guys that I really kind of trust their opinion have said that 37.5 is about right, and it might even be under that. But my opinion is if we look at that team, the 18-19 Nets, that are kind of not a similar team, but a similar probably expectations that this Nets team have. And there were some points that people have made to me that I found quite interesting that may play in our favour to get above that 37.5. Obviously, the Nets don't have any top-tier superstars in the roster this year, so if we've learned anything, is that superstars don't like to play 82 games a season and they take a lot of nights off. They're partial to that. So we don't really have that issue at the moment. There's no one really on the team that will expect to take nights off. And that probably gives you an extra 4 or 5 wins right there at the end of the season. Obviously, as well, the current play-in format that the league has, I think that really encourages teams to be more competitive at the latter end of the season, just because they might be fighting to stay out of the play-in by staying above it, or they might be fighting to get a play-in spot. So, and that might be where the Nets are if things don't go to plan this year. So I think you're about right. A 500 team's probably about there. I'd probably say 43 wins would be a success. But as you say, we're in the dog days of summer right now. We're still quite far away from seeing exactly what this team will be. I don't think it'll be too different, but we could bring in another guy that starts and the team could jump to a 48, 49 win team. So you never know. We'll wait and see. But yeah, I think you're right. It's a wee bit stingy. So I'll say that we'll go over that.
Nice. Gazman at GM Superstar 2 on Twitter says, do we get the old Ben? I'm going to keep this one short and say probably not. If we get a bloody good player though, like old Ben is all-star defensive player of the year caliber player, and I think it would be unfair to expect that from him. Even just like if you take away like the mental health aspect of it, if you just think of the physical injuries and stuff that he's gone through, I don't think we get an old Ben, but we could get very, very good Ben. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we need to focus on getting healthy Ben first. If we get healthy Ben first, then we can look to see how he can elevate his game. But yeah, I'm not expecting to see Ben Simmons come out and be first team all defense, all-star Ben Simmons straight away. It's just not going to happen. He's not going to have Joel Embiid right next to him that he can just pass the ball to and he'll put the ball in the net. That's not going to be there this year. So if we can get Ben Simmons healthy, first of all, and he looks kind of like the spry young guy that he is, I think that's going to be a win in itself.
I want 14-6-6 Ben. That's what I want. That's
enough.
That's all I want from him.
Yeah.
And I want 60 games. Like, he played 42 games last year before getting shut down. But yeah, I just want consistently good Ben. That's all I want. One more and then we'll get out of here. At Samuel Saurus Rex from Discord is probably the most unique individual I have the pleasure of talking to on a regular basis. He said, after seeing a roast dinner once served in a large mug, What other meals would you like to see served in this way? And what are the pros and cons? Reminds me of an Alan Partridge bit where he had a mug of beans with a sausage in it. Pretty good. You can use the sausage as a fork. Any other first stuff in a mug? Obviously, you got your pot noodles. You got your... I'm a big fan of pot pastas as well. I need them when I'm just in from a run because I'm one of those guys now. But yeah, any weirdly served meal?
I'm sure I've had cereal in a mug once, but don't judge me too much because I think it was one of those Sports Direct ones, which are essentially a bowl anyway. But you know, it's like, see, when you're really struggling, the washing machine's on, the dishwasher's on, and you don't have something, then you just need to.
It's like a 6 pint. So,
yeah, I know. I can't see myself going for a roast dinner or anything too extravagant, a bowl though. But yeah, could you make any vegan recipes in a mug, do you reckon?
Oh, for sure. I could knock up a vegan lasagna in a Sports Direct mug, mate.
Yeah.
Nice. This is where the chat really comes into itself. Baked beans in a donut? Why not? Let's go nuts. This isn't the time to be cautious. We are full of Nets optimism on this podcast and in the off season. So that stretches out to the culinary universe as well. I reckon that'll do us for today. Loads of really cool stuff to be excited about. Mikal Bridges is teammate of the year. We got three pretty good pieces, I think, for what we're going to be. We're going to be a defensive powerhouse. And we're going to be incredibly fun to watch. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for getting involved in the chat on YouTube. Thanks for listening back on the pod. And we will see you next week.